Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter 11, text 37, is that right? 34? 37. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Page 582, text 57, chapter 11. Please chant responsively. Kasmach chatet na namaran mahatman. We'll try again. Page number 582, chapter 11. Do you have a different numbering system here? Oh, okay. Chapter 11, text 37. Anybody need more time to find the page? We're okay. Page numbers are different, but the verse number is the same. You got that down. You can look on, that's okay. We'll allow that. You can sneak a peek at his book there. You can too. You can look on. It's nice. Sharing is nice. Okay. Kasmach chatena namaran mahatman.
Kasmach chatena namaran mahatman.
Garishyase brahmanopi dikartha. Tartre. Tartre. Anantadve devesha jagan nivasa. Kam aksharam sat asat tat param yat. Kasmach chatena namaran mahatman. Gariyase brahmanopi dikartre. Ananta devesha jagan nivasa. Tam aksharam sat asat tat param yat. Kasmat.
Why?
Cha. Also. Te.
Unto you.
Na.
Not.
Namaran.
They should offer proper obeisances.
Mahatman.
Oh, great one.
Gariyase.
Who are better?
Brahmanaha.
Then Brahma.
Api.
Although.
Adikartre.
To the Supreme Creator.
Ananta,
unlimited.
Deva
Isha,
O God of the gods.
Jagat
Nivasa,
O refuge of the universe.
Tam,
you are.
Aksharam,
imperishable.
Sat Asat.
To cause and effect.
Tat param.
Transcendental.
Yat.
Because.
Okay,
so translation.
O great one, greater even than Brahma, you are the original creator.
Why then
should they not offer their respectful obeisances unto you?
O limitless one, God of gods, refuge of the universe,
you are the invincible source, the cause of all causes, the transcendental to this material manifestation. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. By this offering of obeisances, Arjuna indicates that Krishna is worshipable by everyone. He is all-pervading, and he is the soul, with a capital S, the soul of every soul. He is addressing Krishna as Mahatma, which means that he is most magnanimous and unlimited. Ananta indicates that there is nothing which is not covered by the influence and energy of the Supreme Lord, and Devesha means that he is the controller of all the demigods and is above them all. He is the shelter of the whole universe. Arjuna also thought that it was fitting that the perfect living entities, that all the perfect living entities and powerful demigods offer their respectful obeisances unto him, because no one is greater than him. Arjuna especially mentions that Krishna is greater than Brahma, because Brahma is created by him. Brahma is born out of the lotus stem grown from the navel abdomen of Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, who was Krishna's plenary expansion. Therefore, Brahma and Lord Shiva, who was born of Lord Brahma, and all other demigods must offer their respectful obeisances. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that the Lord is respected by Lord Shiva and Brahma and similar other demigods. The word aksharam is very significant. The other times he says significant, this one is very significant. Because this material creation is subject to the destruction, or to destruction, but the Lord is above this material creation. He is the cause of all causes, and being so, he is superior to all the conditioned souls within this material nature, as well as the material cosmic manifestation itself. He is therefore the all-great supreme. So this is the beginning of the second of a series of prayers offered to Krishna by Arjuna after having seen the universal form. This morning we were discussing from first canto, chapter 3 of the Bhagavatam, where the incarnations of the Lord are being discussed by Suta Goswami, and we were, the first three are the Purusha avatars. Of all the incarnations of the Lord, they're discussed first. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu. And while discussing Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the Lord who enters within each of the universes that are generated by Mahavishnu and expands those universes and develops by the process of creation those universes, in other words, the shell is filled in with planets and living beings of all varieties of species. This universal form is also discussed. Just like here on this 11th chapter, Krishna is standing there on the chariot with Arjuna, and Arjuna is asking Krishna, please show your universal form, and so he does. Imagine, how can we even imagine? the universal form is so overwhelming. It's everything that exists in all time, in all space, all at once, in all directions. I mean, even just take any part of that. Take everything that exists everywhere at this moment and experience that. But this is everywhere in all time and all space at once, in one place, in one moment. It's like, whoa, whoa, too much, too much. So he's offering prayers first, indicating his realization of who Krishna is. He's already done that in the 10th chapter when Krishna revealed who he was, the cause of all causes, the source of everything. And the Chaturshloki verses are there in the 10th chapter, and Arjuna realizes, oh, you're not just my friend. He was realizing it wasn't just information. It was Krishna imparted the realization of who he was, the cause of all causes, that the source of everything, matter and spirit, and so on. So, following just after that, it's even more overwhelming. It's the entire material creation. The entire material creation. And all phases of time all at once. It's quite overwhelming. But that is but a manifestation of Krishna. So he's addressing Krishna on the chariot, seeing this in all directions, the universal form. It's not just like over there is the universal form. It's in all directions. But he's addressing Krishna, standing before him on the chariot. So he's expressing his realization of who Krishna is. He's going to speak some more in a moment about the universal form. But first is who Krishna is. So we'll go through, as Prabhupada does in the purport, each of the terms. The second line, Griyase Brahmano. You are even greater than Brahma. That's important because, for two reasons, Prabhupada points out that he's greater than Brahma because he's the source of Brahma before Brahma even existed. Garbhadakshaya Vishnu existed. And then Garbhadakshaya Vishnu generated from his own body without the help of a companion, female companion. He just generated a lotus flower on which Lord Brahma was born. So his unborn son. Unborn in the sense of not born by the normal process of birth. So Brahma is sometimes called Aja. Ja and Aja. Ja indicates birth and Aja means not born. Not born in the normal sense of how living entities are born. So he, that's Lord Brahma, who is the unborn from whom all others are born, he has a master. And that's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who is an expansion of Krishna. So, what to speak of others? He doesn't even have to say it. All others. So Prabhupada in the purport indicates, here's one of the some of the others, and that's the son of Lord Brahma, who is Lord Shiva. And as Brahma comes from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Lord Shiva being the son of Lord Brahma, and honors Lord Brahma as his father, what to speak of Krishna? So, Gariyase, Brahmano. And then Api, although you are the source of every living entity that's born, Adi, Kartre, you're the Kartre, like the word Kartritvam, of the creating something. You're the original Kartre, you're the original creator. Brahma creates, but you're the creator of the one who creates. Some of you that are housewives and stay at home from do your services at home, maybe from time to time, maybe on weekends they come around also. Persons of the Mormon faith may have visited your door. How many have been visited by Mormons? Nobody. Okay. If you are someday visited by a Mormon, ask them, can you please describe two things according to the teachings of your religion? Can you describe who is the creator? And can you also describe what is the, if one becomes like the highest possible attainment of a Mormon in the Mormon faith, what is that? Ask them those two questions. And you'll get something like this. And the second answer is you can become the creator. The perfection of their religion is that you become something like Brahma. Not the creator of the creator, but the creator. The chief engineer of the universe. Ask them. They don't know the Vedic. Some of them do, but most of them don't know what the Vedic teaching is. Just ask them in a polite way. And, you know, you don't need to embarrass them or anything. Just, what is your teaching? So you can get an understanding of what their teaching is. In short, because devotees that have come from Utah and have grown up in the Mormon faith and have become devotees have explained this to me. So I've not read the Book of Mormon, but this is what they've explained to me, that the teaching is that you can become that creator. You become so elevated that you can create universes. Now, they don't make the distinction that there is a creator of the creator. It's just you become, that you can become the creator. And who is the creator? Maybe you ask in that sequence, who is the creator? And he creates the universe. So the Vedic picture certainly makes a distinction, as Arjuna is doing, between the creator and the creator of the creator. Or sarga and visarga in Sanskrit language. We were discussing that this morning. Sarga is what Vishnu does and visarga is what Brahma does. Brahma takes everything that he, it's just like, you know, whoever is doing all the work out here on the front of the building. They didn't like create those bags of stucco back there, or they didn't create the mesh that went on the front, or they didn't create, but Vishnu supplies all the ingredients. It's his energy. Vishnu supplies the plan. He's like, you know, the architect. He makes the plan, the blueprint. Here's something that's described in one of the Puranas, how when Brahma, at the beginning of each day, Brahma, he wakes up. And he does his sadhana, just like a nice devotee does their sadhana. And part of his sadhana is the same sadhana that's described in Sri Brahma Samhita, which is he chants his mantra. He has two of them. You read Sri Brahma Samhita and you can read what those mantras are. And he also meditates upon the plan. And to meditate upon the plan, it's like, you know, he has to do his service for the day. So he meditates upon the universal form, because within the universal form is the plan of the structure of the universe, and it's, like, you know, vertical. There's lower, intermediate, and higher planets, and there's living entities that are on the limbs of the universal form. And that's the plan. It's not like he forgot, but he just, like, you know, it's a refresh, and he goes and creates. Because at the night of every day of Brahma, there's a night, and at the night of Brahma, there's a partial devastation. Did you know that? During the night of Brahma, there's a partial devastation. Okay. So, what happens is just before the day ends of Brahma, there's a long drought. Like no rain for hundreds and hundreds of years. So you know what happens when things get very dry, they can ignite very quickly. Then there's a fire. That's, you know, Ananta Shesh. And fire. And when things are dry and there's fire, they ignite. This is described in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. The lower planetary systems, including the heavenly planets, up to and including the heavenly planets, are burned. And those, there's above the heavenly planets, there's Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Svargaloka. They don't burn. But Maharloka gets so hot, they get in their vimanas and they go to Tapaloka and Janaloka. It's just like, get away from that heat. And at the end of that fire, there's a whole bunch of rain. And what happens when you have ashes and a whole bunch of rain? It dissolves. Everything dissolves into the waters of devastation. And that's like, you know, at night it rains. When weather is regulated, during Vedic times, it's described in scriptures, it would rain nicely at night. Now everything's unregulated, but it would rain, and then morning, that everything would be fresh. The sun would come, the next day begins. So that's how Brahma's day. There's this water of devastation during the night of Brahma, and then it subsides, and then Brahma recreates that which has been destroyed. Everybody's got some service. That's what Brahma's service is. Not he does it once. He does it once, and then each day he does it again, at least partial creation, according to scripture. And the end of his life, there's a total annihilation. And it's similar. So, he's a creator. But he gets the ingredients, he gets the plan, he gets the Srishti Shakti, he gets the creative impetus, the intelligence, the self-realization, he gets everything from Vishnu. He gets knowledge. After he creates, he imparts the knowledge to those who he created, telling them this is what your duty is. Now that you receive this form of life, especially the human form of life, here's the operator's manual. Here's how you use it for elevation. Like Krishna says in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning I sent forth generation of men and demigods. Well, that's Brahma that sends the generating of many men and demigods. And with them, this sacrifice. That's Lord Brahma. He's imparting knowledge. The source of that knowledge is the Supreme. It's not that Brahma made it up. He, tene Brahma hridaya adhikavya. He received it and he passed it on. And he has a system of how he passes it on. It's a disciplic succession system. But here in this verse, Arjuna is making it very simple. You are the greatest. You're better than the greatest. Brahma is the greatest, most intelligent being in all of creation, more than Einstein or anybody else, most intelligent person in all of creation, and you're the creator of that person, and you're the source of intelligence of that person. Why then should they, They is referring to the demigods in particular, because in the universal form, Arjuna saw all the demigods. Not just like one at a time, or a few of them he saw, a whole host of demigods. That's 33 million demigods. Imagine seeing 33 million anything all at once. Very overwhelming. That's what he saw in this universal form. And so why should they not worship you? Because they came from Brahma, who came from an expansion of you. So in uncultured society called America, who cares about, you know, Cassius Clay can say, I'm the greatest, and someone thinks, yeah, he's the greatest. Or, well, anyway, without going down lists of people that may be claiming that they're the greatest. But in civilized or cultured society, when someone is great, they're due respect. And someone's the greatest, they're due the utmost respect. In fact, that's in the previous chapter, that's something that Krishna has described. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante ma. Iti matva, thus knowing who is the source of everything, bhajante ma. They worship me. Buddha bhava samandita. So, for a cultured person as Arjuna and the demigods, like highly cultured, when you understand who is the source of all greatness, you don't just say, you know, can I get your autograph? Or can I take a picture of you? Can I stand next to you, have my cousin take a picture of you while we're... You worship them. Why shouldn't they at least offer their obeisances? Nameran. And Mahatman. So, elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, a living entity who has taken shelter of the spiritual energy, Devihi Yeshu Gunamai Mamamaya Dharatyaya, that person who has taken Mam Evaye Prapadyante, Mayamitam Tarantite, they're considered great souls because they've taken shelter of Krishna. They can cross beyond the material energy. Mahatmanas to mam partha, daivim prakritim ashrita. Who is the Mahatma amongst souls? Those who have taken shelter of the spiritual energy. And the source of the spiritual energy, Arjuna is recognizing, is you. Those who take shelter of the spiritual energy are great souls. Then what are you? You're the source of that spiritual energy that makes these others great souls. You're the greatest. And Ananta. Meaning of Ananta is, you know the meaning of Ananta? No. I'm asking if he knows the meaning of Ananta. Ananta. Don't know. Without limit. Ananta. That's like Ananta Shesha. You know who Ananta Shesha is, right? Who's Ananta Shesha? Yeah, Balaram. And what does Ananta Shesha do? Ananta Shesha do? Huh? He has hoods. And what does he do with those hoods? He covers the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And with the rest of his body, he makes a resting place, like a couch or a bed or, you know, a resting place, a seat for the Lord, and covers him like with a canopy, with his hoods. That's it. One of the things an Antisheshya does. So, Ananta means unlimited. Unlimited. What in this world that's created is unlimited? The answer is, there isn't something in this created realm that's unlimited. Everything is limited. And not only everything is limited, but you take away something from that limited and it's less. But Ananta is so unlimited that you take away something and he's still unlimited. There isn't anything of this world that's like that. Just like the evocation verse of Ishopanishad. Om Purnam, does anybody know that verse? Om Purnam Adat Purnam Idam. Purnat Purnam Udachate. Purnasya Purnam Adaya. Purnam Eva Vishishit. So you do know. So that verse is, this Purnam means complete. And the Supreme, Om Purnam, the Supreme is so complete that when, even though complete units emanate from him, he remains complete. So, let's do this. Try to think of something that's so big that you take away something from that thing that's so big and it's still equally as big. You can't think of something like that. But to speak of something existing, you can't even think of something. Not gross nor subtle, that's so big, that you take away something, it's still unlimitedly big. It's less by something. But the Supreme is Ananta. He's so big you can take away so many somethings, or he can expand it to so many somethings, and he's not anything less. That's not material. That Ananta means not material, because anything material is limited. So he's addressing him. You are Ananta. He's standing right before him, like, you know, there's his spiritual form, looks like, because most people think God, well, some people think that if God has form, then he's limited, right? Because form limits. But formless, that's unlimited. But Arjuna is addressing Krishna, Bhagavan. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha is the person who is unlimited. What person is unlimited? The answer is someone whose form and everything about them is all spiritual. So spirit can be both formless and form, and with form is no less unlimited, or it does not become limited by form. Or another term that's used in the Bhagavatam is Advaya. Advaya. You know what Dvaita and Advaita means? Sorry to pick on you, but you're up front, maybe. I won't pick on you anymore. What does Ananta mean? Or what does Advaita mean? Dvaita and Advaita.
Dvaita means duality.
Dvaita means duality. And Advaita means? Non-dual. Oneness. A little vocabulary expansion this evening. Okay, so Dvaita and Advaita. Now, in the Bhagavatam, there's a very important verse. Our acharyas point to it as an especially important verse. It's not the principal utterance of the whole, not the Mahavakya of the whole Bhagavatam, but it's a very important verse. And that very important verse says, Vedanta tat tatva vidas tatvam Vedanta tat tattva vidvas tattvam yajjnanam advayam, this knowledge that's non-dual. Those who are learned in Vedanta know that that which is of the advaya tattva, of the non-dual nature, consists of three. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti shabdyate. So, what that means is, for our purposes, Bhagavan, like Krishna speaking in Bhagavad Gita, he's Sri Bhagavan. Bhagavan is also Advaya. The form of Krishna is non-dual. We don't have experience of non-dual forms. We have experience of dual. There is the body and there is the self. That's dual. Or there's now you see it, now you don't. That's dual. Like, you know, here today and gone tomorrow, or born, it's subject to time and decay. It gets old and dies, and it's back to the elements. Krishna's form is not of that nature. By his janma and by his lila, he chose. It's not of the dimension of duality. So, Ananta, you are unlimited. Although it looks like limited, there he is standing. But he's realized you're not limited. Rather, by your expansion as Paramatma, you're all-pervasive. Queen Kunti says the same thing. Yes, in her prayers, in the Bhagavatam, 8th chapter of the first canto, she's speaking to Krishna, who's standing before her, and she says, I know who you are. You are the all-pervasive super soul. And Krishna could say, Aunt Kunti, what are you speaking about? I'm your nephew, all-pervasive super soul. You are. And he is. And she knows it. Although, it's the person standing before her. That is, by Krishna's expansions, he's manifested himself as super soul in the heart of every living being everywhere. The Vedic example of this is the sun and the reflection of the sun on water pots. So we don't have so many water pots in America, but in Vedic times there are water pots. So it was a good metaphor. Because when you look at the water pot, you see, oh, there's the sun reflecting on the surface of the water in the water pot. And there's the sun reflecting on the surface of the water in that water pot, and so on. But those so many, it's actually only one. It's only one, although it appears to be many. Supersoul is only one, and that supersoul is, that one is Krishna, who, by his kalavishesha, by his portion of his plenary portion expansion, he manifests within the heart of every living being. And therefore, he's called here as the soul of souls, soul with a capital S, of souls with a small s. That means let's do this. Within the heart of every living being, there's a soul. Within the heart of every soul is the Supreme Soul. So he's within the heart of hearts. Poetic, but also factual. We sometimes say side by side, but actually he's within the heart of the soul. Now let me tell you, Prabhupada was asked this question by one of my godbrothers, and he told me about asking Prabhupada this question. He said, Prabhupada, how is it that the super soul, which is described in the Bhagavatam as being the dimension between the thumb and the forefinger, so like 8 inches tall, roughly, right there, and the super soul, who is 8 inches tall, is within the heart of the living entity, that's 1/10,000 the tip of a hair. Though spatially it doesn't work, was his question. And Prabhupada repeated back his question and said, what is the problem? The living entity is 1/10,000 the tip of a hair, and super soul 8 inches tall is within the heart of the living entity. What is the problem? So they continued the conversation, and he asked the question later, and he got the same answer, verbatim. It's not a, you know, a material, Krishna's being within the heart is not material. Any more than, you know, another question was, what about heart transplants? And when the heart is removed, is the soul also removed? And they put a new heart in and you got a new soul in there? And... Prabhupada? And he said, no. To say it's in the heart is to say it's in the region of the heart, and if the heart is removed, if, you know, the muscle is removed, it doesn't, you know, you put another muscle or a plastic one or whatever they use these days, it doesn't change the soul. If it's a successful operation, the person doesn't die on the table, it's the same soul, just a different machine part. To say the soul is within the heart. And to say the super soul is within the heart of the living entity, similar. It's the supreme soul. Of course, he can make himself smaller than that if he wants to. He can, you know, become bigger, smaller, or whatever he wants to. Just like he appeared before Maharaj Parikshit. Who was within the womb of Uttara. And as he appeared before Maharaj Parikshit, he appeared of the appropriate size so that the little child within the embryo could see him. And he appeared not only the right size, but he just stayed there before him to pacify him. Because the heat of the Brahmastra was scorching. Although he was protected by the Lord from that scorching heat, it was still, you know, when it's hot, it's hot. It was scorching hot. Later it's described by the brahmanas who were... It was described by Narada Muni. No, it was described by Bhishma Dev to... Yudhisthira Maharaj, that your son did not, the condition that he was subjected to, your grandson, was subjected to such a severe condition. It was impossible for him to live. Even the Brahmastra didn't strike, just the heat was so intense. But because he was an intense Kshatriya, he survived. And the Lord's protection. The Lord just standing before him. You know, when you're really absorbed in something, your level of tolerance is far greater. And the other is also true. If you really don't like what you're doing, a little thing can be really distracting. Like, you know, summer heat in the kitchen, I don't want to be here. You feel the heat even more. And vice versa. Our devotee cooks come from India and it's cold in St. Louis and they go in that kitchen and it's cold in this kitchen. Anyway, you get the idea. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is also here described as Aksharam. Because when this place is created, this place is annihilated, he's not annihilated. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes there's a place in this universe that when this universe is destroyed, that part is not destroyed. That's Svetadvipa. the spiritual planet that's within this material universe. Now, how can you have a spiritual planet within this material universe? You can have a spiritual planet within the material universe the same way Krishna can appear in a spiritual form. Like, you know, here's the vastness of the spiritual sky, and in the total expanse of the spiritual sky, there's this little cloud called Mahatattva, the total material energy. And within that vastness of the spiritual sky, there's also a spiritual planet that is also within the sphere of Mahatattva. Why not? Just like there's a spirit soul within this body that's also not destroyed when the body is destroyed. And there's a spiritual planet within the whole universe that's not destroyed when this universe is destroyed. So Arjuna is saying that about Krishna. All these things in this universal form, they're but expansions from you who are not destroyed. They will be destroyed. They come into being and go out of being, but not you. You're Aksharam. You cannot be destroyed. Imperishable. The soul is also described in the second chapter as imperishable. But Krishna is imperishable. So what does that say? Practical conclusion of all this is, let us engage in your work. Let's take all those things that come from you and use them in your service, and that's the proper use of all things. That's the practical conclusion. Besides, you know, it's nice glorification. It'd be nice to be able to say that to somebody, but, you know, it wouldn't be true. Except for Krishna, it's true. It's not flattery. It's true. And Arjuna knows what to do with truth. When you act upon such truth as this, you become Krishna's devotee. And it works the other way also. By devotion only can one understand these things about Krishna. Otherwise, it's hyperbole. It's just like some, whatever it is, you know, literary exaggeration for sentimental people. That's how it's taken by some. But Krishna's supremacy is being recognized by Arjuna. And he is being very specific in detailing how he understands Krishna's supremacy over all these host of demigods that he's seen in the universal form. Spread throughout the body of the universal form, you are the source of them. Therefore, they should all worship you. And I want to worship you. Okay. Any questions or comments on the verse? Yes?
The universal form is imaginary, but yet Arjuna sees it. So I'm confused.
We had this discussion, I can recall, in one Bhagavatam class. Do you remember the discussion?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Did you go back and play that class back a few times? I'd recommend that you do that, because we drilled on this topic. There was many yeah buts after the first answer. You remember? I remember. Okay, I don't remember all of what I said, I just remember the drilling. Okay, so, imaginary in this sense, imaginary as in temporary, as in that which is asat. But Krishna is the source of sat and asat, as is described right here in the verse. Tvam aksharam satasat. Tat param yat, the perishable and imperishable. The We can say the same about the whole cosmic manifestation. That it's imaginary. It's like a dream. So Prabhupada helps us understand that by going down the following path. When you're asleep, you're seeing a dream sometimes. And when you wake up, you know, oh, that was just a dream. But we consider it just a dream because we spend more hours waking. And that's like not a dream. But that's relative. When you're sleeping, waking is a dream. And when you're waking, the sleeping was a dream. So relatively, one's a dream unto the other. From the absolute perspective, they're both a dream. As much as the dream is to us when we're waking, from the position of self-realization, dreaming at night or dreaming during the day, or you know, life during the day, it's but a dream in comparison to what's real, or in contrast to what's real. It's asat, or it's imaginary. Well, when you're dreaming, and let's say, you know, a tiger is chasing you, you can scream and then wake up screaming. And your body is, your heart is beating and your body is sweating and you're feeling fear. And you realize, oh, it was just a dream. It's okay. And likewise, when we're experiencing things, you know, during the daytime, you know, it's a hot day and you're eating an ice cream cone. The kids are awake now. It's good. Don't tell me it's imaginary. It's good. Give me another imaginary. Give me a, you know, vanilla one this time. Strawberry. Strawberry imagination. Thank you. So, but it's not who we really are in that sense. Now you see it, now you don't. The cosmic manifestation is then withdrawn. And it's going to be withdrawn. Momentarily. It's not who we really are, nor the realm in which we belong. Or which, you know, we're actually in, just we've lost sight of it. We're in the spiritual sky. Right now. We just, you know, have lost contact with it. Anything else? Yes?
I want to know what exactly was the Brahm Sangeeta
written? What is it?
When was it written, approximately?
Sometime after Brahma had his realization. But it doesn't say when it was written.
Okay, there's a reason why I was asking the question, because maintainings probably written around the time of Chaitanya by one of his disciples. And the reason why I bring the question up...
No, but it wasn't written by Chaitanya by one of his disciples, because he founded it in one of the South Indian temples.
Right, and that's what some claim.
Okay, well, it's a wrong claim. Nice try, but it's a wrong claim.
There's a couple versions of the Brahma Samhita, you know, where it says, Ishvara Parma Krishna Sakshit and not the Supreme Original.
Yeah.
And then a few verses later, it says that Krishna created Vishnu. And that would seem to dispel the belief that Krishna was the eighth incarnation of Vishnu.
Oh, that's not a problem. Krishna can create Vishnu, and Krishna is the eighth incarnation of Vishnu. That's not a problem. You want to hear how it's not a problem?
Because I talk to other people, schools of thought, and they just totally disagree with
okay.
The original.
Hey, that's okay. We don't mind if they want to disagree. But we can offer an explanation. Vishnu, we'll try to keep it simple. Vishnu is, the category Vishnu is for the purpose of creation of the material world, yes? So beyond the material world, there's this spiritual sky. And in that vast spiritual sky, there's spiritual planets, they're Vaikuntha planets. And the presiding deities of those Vaikuntha planets, from time to time, they descend in this created realm. Through whom do they descend? Vishnu. So that Krishna, who resides in Goloka Vrindavan, and expands himself as the Purusha avatars, and then appears in this world which Vishnu, his expansion, has created. Both statements are not contradictory. If we understand that just like, you know, this is the door for most of us, the pujari may have come through that door. Most of us came through that door above the, where there's the exit sign, that one. So we came in to this room through that door. Now, did we exist before we came into this room? So, but it's true to say we enter the room through the door. So Krishna enters as the eighth avatar of Vishnu. And the door, Vishnu, is an expansion of Krishna in the spiritual world. They're not contradictory statements. But, you know, if somebody else wants to read it in a different way, that's okay. We will be happy to discuss with them. And our understanding is on the authority, primarily on the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Sutta is asked by the sages to describe those forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. So he does. He starts with the Purusha avatars, the Vishnu forms, and describes the Lila avatars and the Guna avatars and the Shaktivesha avatars, some of them. Not a comprehensive, complete list. And then it says, amongst all of these, one is the source of all the other ones. And Krishna is the source of all the other avatars, including Vishnu, through whom he appears as an avatar of Vishnu. It's explicit, and it's not contradictory. We can't do that. We can't be the son of somebody and also the father of somebody. But it's the same somebody. But Krishna can't. And by that I've just described how he accomplishes it. Something else? Yes.
In continuation to Sri Ramakrishna's question.
Okay.
You say that in the ninth chapter it says that Krishna says that everything pervades in me and I'm the creator. I don't belong to this imaginary.
Yeah. You keep going.
Cosmic,
you're doing fine.
Cosmic manifestation.
Yes.
So he says that it is all his creation. So how can the Vishwarupa be an imaginary form?
It's imaginary in the sense of temporary. Let's do this. Krishna has, put as a question, does Krishna have limited or unlimited energies? Unlimited. Okay. So amongst those unlimited energies are, well, there's three categories. Internal, external, and marginal. Yes? So Krishna has external energies. That's like this place, the cosmic manifestation. Those are apara prakriti, inferior energy. You with me so far? Okay. So the nature of that apara prakriti, it's Krishna's energy, but it's his inferior energy, and that inferior energy is sometimes manifest, sometimes not manifest. Sometimes manifest, sometimes not manifest. Vyakta and avyakta. So that which is sometimes and sometimes not In the language of Bhagavad Gita, that's asat. Sat means eternally existing. It's not sometimes, sometimes not. In that sense, the material creation is inferior, and but yet part of Krishna's unlimited energies. That all of those energies are within Krishna, but Krishna has his own separate existence. So your question specifically, one more time, as I understood it, was how is that which is imaginary coming from Krishna, who is the eternal truth? That's your question?
Yes, and in continuation to that, when it is totally in Krishna itself, why is it not a truth?
The energy is true, but the manifestation of the energy is not. Oh. In the seventh chapter, he describes Bina Prakritir Ashtada, the separated eight material energies. The energies are his, and they're true. But the forms are not. The form of the cosmic manifestation is not. Okay? You know, take here's two examples. A mirage. It's not water, but it is something. To accept a mirage as water is illusion. It's not water. In a desert, by definition, it's no water. To see water in a desert is a mirage. But it is something. It's reflection of light on the sand that looks like water. But it's not water. It's something. So the elements, they exist. But, you know, let's say this is a table. Well, let's take a little Zippo lighter and see if it's a table. Now it's a fire. Then after a little while, it's ashes. Where'd the table go? Where's the table? There's no table. It's asat. It's insubstantial. What's substantial, the elements are substantial, but the elements can transform. The Sanskrit word is vikarams. They undergo transformations of state. But the elements themselves are Krishna's energy. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. That's his separated eight material energies. But table is not substantial. Cosmic manifestation is not substantial. Thoughts and feelings are not substantial. They're here one moment and gone the next moment. We got another bunch of thoughts and feelings. It's asat. And the cosmic manifestation is made up of those gross and subtle elements. Mixing and changing and... But they're Krishna's energies. Yes.
So when it says that the universe is imaginary, so it means that it's temporary?
Say it again.
When it says that the universe is imaginary.
Which is? Ignorance is imaginary, you said?
Universe.
Oh, okay.
So does that mean it's also temporary?
Oh, yeah. Sure. You know of any universes in this material world that are... So the universal form is imaginary, the universe is imaginary in the sense that it's temporary. You know, you could say, oh yeah, it's imaginary, well, let me take this baseball bat and hit you over the head, then you just tell me it's imaginary, okay? And you said it, it's imaginary. Boom. Okay, well, I'll get my imaginary police officer and put you in the imaginary jail for that one. Salt and battery. But the, you know, in relation to the soul, it's temporary. And therefore, in that sense, imaginary. It's not, there is no substance. As far as the soul is concerned, it's but a dream. As during a dream, whatever it is that we dream in our dreams, it's not happening. It's just, on the mental plane, it's happening. But it's not substantial. The Bhagavatam gives this example. There's no more substance to it than the dream of a man who is dreaming that his head is cut off. And he sees his head getting cut off. Now, how can you see your head get cut off? Because the seeing capacity is in your head. And how can you see your head get cut off? You can't. But you can dream it. But it's not real. And likewise, all other things in dreams are not real. And likewise, all other things in the day type of dreaming is not real. Although, here's something very nice that Lord Kapila says to Devahuti. Because of the presence of the soul, because of the sat feature of the soul, this impermanent appears to be real. But remove the sat feature of the soul, the whole thing disintegrates. But that's part of, you know, Maya doesn't do her thing unless there's souls to do Maya on. That where in the Maya is, it looks real. And it feels real. And don't tell me it's not real. I like this ice cream cone. Give me another one. I want more. You get the idea. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
What is the significance of universe being created and annihilated in a cyclical way? Why Brahma has to do every day the same job?
He gives him something to do. Part of the Lord's plan. We all have something to do, right? Even lazy people have something to do. And Brahma's not a lazy person. He's got, you know, he's got very responsible work to do. Because the purpose of creation is to provide living entities a means of getting out of their forgetfulness of Krishna. It was designed with that intent. Gradually, up to the human form of life, to come to the point where, and then the duties and person to teach those duties in the scriptures and the whole thing. It's expert, because it's the Lord's plan. So, you know, he has something to do. In Krishna's service. And we all have something to do in Krishna's service, according to our capacity. Okay. Looks like we're done. Thank you very much, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.